Okay, good morning. If everybody has the source sheet in front of them, there are a few, maybe they're making a few at the back. Let's just see if we can, if you don't mind asking one of the people at the back if they're making some more. No problem. Thank you. It's all recording, it's good. I don't need to press anything.
That's good.
Good morning to everybody. Welcome to the Shir. I'd like to start off by an important announcement that today's Shir is being sponsored. It is being sponsored by Aline German, Le'ilu Nishma Shoshana Bat Yaakov, Aleha Shalom, whose Yuletide is on the 22nd of Sivan. So this learning should be Le'ilu Nishmata. We should learn some good Torah. We should rise in our own understandings, and that will cause an Ilu Nishama Be'ezrat Hashem for her. Therefore, we are on the third sheet. This is the third shiur of a series of what I think now will probably be 10. Meaning we've worked out three dates in August. It's been a busy week for the Manning family. We actually bought a house this week, which is very exciting. We already had a house. We already had an apartment in Haranoff, which we sold a few weeks ago, and we've been living a little bit in limbo since, having sold an apartment without anywhere to go. But we're Israeli now, so we do that kind of thing. I don't think I've ever done that when I was in England. But Baruch Hashem, we bought a house that we really wanted to buy in Alon Shvut, and therefore it's going to be a big move for us in all sorts of ways. Be'ezrat Hashem. You don't want us to leave Haranov?
No.
Or you don't want us to move to Alon Shvut, which is it? Okay, fine. So we'll come back and visit. Be'ezrat Hashem. So the upshot of that move, or that at least getting our summer more organized in our mind, is that I've been able to work out three more dates here with Rivka for the series in August. So to the extent that anyone's around between Tisha B'Av and Elul, I know people go away, we will, please God, be having the final three shiurim during August as well. Any changes, I'm sure Rivka and the team here will let you know. Which does mean that we can expand our purview a little bit and talk on other topics that we might not have had time for otherwise. And if I could just recap over the first two shiurim, we have been talking so far about the following. Are they making more sheets in the end? Did they? They're doing them? Ah, this lady has some spares here. Okay. Okay, in the first class, if you'll recall, there's a gentleman over there that would like one. In the first class, if you'll recall, we looked in some detail at the issue of the written Torah, the Torah Shebichtav, and the different views as to how that was put together over the 40 years in the desert. And we looked at why that matters and why that's of relevance to us today. And it's not just a historical issue, it's also an issue as to how we read the Chumash and how we understand the development of the Chumash. In the second class, last time we were a little bit cut short because we had the special exercise. We had a siren at 11 o'clock, and therefore we couldn't quite finish. But don't worry, because you'll get today what I couldn't do last time, please God. Last time we looked at the issue of Torah Shebaal Peh, and I want to recap one very important point. Last time we saw two conflicting sets of sources. One set of sources seems to indicate that every single detail that could possibly be in the halakhic system was given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Sinai. Even to the point of things that seem to be incoherent to us, that the whole of Tanakh was given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Sinai, even though we know that it was written much of it later, that the whole of the Mishnah, the whole of the Talmud, and if you remember, I mentioned to you the conversation I had with a girl on the bus in Poland. If you remember, we took a group of girls, and she said to me, "Rabbi, how could the Gemara have been given?" She asked another rabbi, "Was the Gemara given at Sinai?" And he said, "Yes," which is consistent with some of the sources we saw last time. And she said, "How could that be? Surely all the places and the names and the people and the events that came thousands of years later, what sense does it make to say that was given on Sinai?" So we saw those sources, we asked that question. Then we saw other sources last time that said, in the Midrash itself and the Chazal, that said, "No, how can that be, really? Moshe Rabbeinu learned the entire Torah at Sinai, it makes no sense." Meaning Chazal asked themselves, "That makes no sense." And the answer we gave last time was as follows. We looked at Rav Moshe Glasner, we looked at a number of sources, and we said that there are different types of Torah Shebaal Peh. Indeed, some was given on Sinai, the user guide, the manual as to how to understand the 613 mitzvahs. The Rambam said, we saw at the end of last time, the Rambam said that every mitzvah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu was given the perusha, the inyana, was given together with an explanation. It's not as if Moshe walked out of the Ohel Moed and said, guys, there's good news and bad news. The good news is, we've got a brand new mitzvah, we're not allowed to wear shatnas. The bad news is, we don't have a clue what that means, but we'll work it out one day. No, says the Rambam, absolutely not, that's not true. They had whatever they needed in order to make sense of the Torah there and then. But, says the Rambam, and this is very important, we'll see again today, there was a second limb to Torah Shabbat Al-Peh, which is developing, which is evolving, which is dynamic, which is not given in its explicit form, the Prateha of Sinai, but it's given the Klaleha. It's given in principle, it's given in general methodologies, which we call drash, whereby Chazal, over the centuries, and when I say Chazal, I mean here the rabbis up until the time of the Gemara, whereby Chazal were able to use the text, which we did receive at Sinai through the 40 years, and use with it, and use on it the methodologies that they received, and learn new halakha. And remember we learned last time that beautiful Gemara in Menachos, where Rabbi Akiva, where Moshe Rabbeinu wants to know what is the purpose of the little crowns on the Torah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes him, as it were, midrashically forward to the base medrash of Rabbi Akiva, and he doesn't understand the shir. Remember, we learned this right at the end last time, and he says, Rabbanu Shinana, why don't I understand the shir? I'm the one that received the Torah. And then the students asked Rabbi Akiva, where do you get this halacha from? And he said, this is halacha la Moshe Mitzinai. And then Moshe understands. What does Moshe understand? That halacha Mitzinai is not just a case of transmitting the specifics, there were specifics, but it's also an evolving process of interpretation, which is also called Torah Mitzinai, as long as you're using the correct text, the correct rules, and the correct brains. And then it can be Torah Mitzinai as well. So Torah Mitzinai is not such a straightforward concept. And we'll see more about that today. In fact, if you look in the first source today, the Rambam himself, we'll see a lot from the Rambam today, because the Rambam is one of the main commentators on this particular issue, on this particular topic. He writes in his introduction to the Mishnah that there are five types of Torah Shabbat Peh. And we have to get this clear to understand it better. Look at number one. Nipsal, if you are shake down. All of the dinim, every halacha in the book, every single one that you'll find anywhere, source number one on page one, will be divided into one of these five, will fit into one of these five categories. What are those categories? So he says, Achelik HaRishon, the first chelik, the first category, is HaPeirushim HaMukubalim Mimosha. This is what I said, this is the user guide, this is the manual, the explanations of the written Torah received from Moshe, sheyesh lahem remez b'katuv, they relate to what is written, or she'ev she'lelam dam ba'achasam, or you could maybe even learn them out from the text, they have a connection, they have a relationship with the text, v'zeh ein bo machlokes klal, and that, this is very important, says the Rambam, there is no machloket on these things, and we'll give examples in a minute, ela kol zman she'yoma adam, if a person can show and say, kibalti kach v'kach, I have a Kabbalah, I have a received Masorah. The idea of Masorah. Masorah is often translated as tradition. But probably more accurately is transmission. Limsor is to give over. If someone says, I have a clear transmission from Moshe, Mistalek kol v'koach, everything is resolved. And we see this in the Gemara many times. They're arguing about this and that. Famous example. Moavi v'lo Moaviyah. The issue of Ruth. And the Gemara there in Yevamos that talks about Doeg, who is arguing that David HaMelech is not, not only should he not be marrying the princess, the King Shaul's daughter, but he's not even Jewish. Why? Because he descends from a Moabite woman. And you have a whole daf of Gemara there, where going forward, Moaviyah, Moavi, yes, no, does it apply to the female Moaviyah, just the male, etc. Until at the very end of that sugya, along comes someone that's called Yeter HaYishmaeli, and he says, stop, I have a Kabbalah from Shmuel HaNavi, this is all nonsense. I have a Kabbalah from Sinai. And they check it out and they say, ah yes, and that's the end of the argument. The end. Of course you can't just turn up and say, I have a Kabbalah, they need to check you out, where is it from? But one says the Rambam, you have a clear Kabbalah from Sinai, and says the Rambam, there's no machlokas on this. Which is a very interesting claim. He almost throws down the gauntlet for all future generations to try and prove him wrong. And there are many different people over the 1,000 years since the Rambam, 800 years since the Rambam. Make a diary date, by the way. 2035 will be the 900th anniversary of the birth of the Rambam. And there'll be lots of stuff going on about that, so it's not long from now. But there's been 900 years since. I know it sounds like a long time away, but believe me, it comes around pretty quick. I said to one of my students, I teach a lot of 18-year-old women, and they said to me the other day, you know, we're worried about, you know, we want to make Aliyah, we're worried about the education of our children, where we're going to put them in schools, it's very concerning. And I said, I understand that, you're quite right, but do you realize that your children will graduate from high school in the 2040s? Do you have any conception of what the world will be like in 2045? It sounds like, you know, a million years from now, but actually it's really not. So time flies. But says the Rambam, there is no machlokus on this issue, and other people say, are you sure? Is that correct? Let me give you some examples. And we'll see a little bit later other examples. Have a look at number two for a second. We'll go back to number one in a second, but have a look at number two. Number two, the Rambam underlines this. Uka'asher meit alav hashalom. When Moshe died, ukfar masar Yoshua, this word masar, masorah, he transmitted, he handed over already to Yeshua. Ha-peirushim, these explanations, she-nitnu lo, which had been given to him, va-asku bahem Yeshua, va-anshei doira, and then Yeshua and all of his generation were involved in them, okay? V'chol ma-she kibul mimenu, everything that was received from Moshe Rabbeinu, who or echad ha-zakenim, whether him or whether one of his, one of the rabbis at the time, the elders, ein bo masa umatan. There's no masa umatan, there's no to and fro, there's no debate. V'lot nifla bot machlokas, there is no machlokas at all. And number three, he underlines that further. V'hinei zeh yisod tzarev shetedem. You really need to understand this, says the Rambam. V'hu sheha pirushim hamukubali mimoshe, the explanations received from Moshe, ein behem machlokas klal. The Rambam is very insistent on this. And he gives examples. Lefi, she'ad achshav, until this very day, he says, lo imatsanu shenaflo machlokas bein hachachamim v'shum zman min hazmanu. We never found any debate or disagreement in the rabbis, mimoshe Rabbeinu ad Rav Ashi, from Moshe all the way to the Talmud to Rav Ashi, she'echad amah, maybe one of them would say, she'mish yisima ayin adam, someone who blinded another person, mesamid et eino, maybe they should blind him back, doesn't it say an eye for an eye? Why does nobody suggests that if you were blinded by someone, God forbid, they blind him back? Kamama Hashem Itzalei, Ayin Ba'ayin. The Acher, maybe someone else would say, Damim Bilvad, it's only monetary compensation, Chayav. He says, the Rambam, we never found that. We never found a machlokas about that particular issue. Everybody understood from the very beginning to now that Ayin Tachat Ayin does not mean you blind other people. But again, similarly, Lo Imatzanu Machlokas B'Mashe Ama Hakosa Pre-Eitz Hadar. It says on Sukkot you take a pre-eighth hadar, the fruit of a beautiful tree, or maybe the beautiful fruit of a tree. She'echad aman, one maybe would say shehu ha'etrog, maybe this is an etrog. Va'acher aman, another one would say shehu ha'prish, maybe it's an apple, or rimon, or a pomegranate, or zulatan, maybe it's a kiwi, or a banana, or a kumquat. Nobody, says the Rambam, through history has ever suggested that an etrog is anything other than an etrog. Similarly, he could have brought many examples. It says in the Torah you have to wear totafot between your eyes. What does totafot mean? It may not even be a Hebrew word. Rabbi Akiva suggests it's from an African language. Okay, whatever that means. Why Africans in the Torah is not for now. But what a totafot. Every single pair of tefillin that we ever dug up have been black and square and leather. None of them have been pink and round and fluffy. None of them. Ah, but the rabbis disagree on everything. We have this understanding. Oh, everything's a machlokas, says the Rambam. Really not the same. In terms of the user guide that we received at Sinai, we tried very, very hard not to have any machlokas at all. Is it perfect? The Rambam seems to say yes. Others say, well, not quite, etc. There are some shailas. Even the Rambam himself says, for example, on the tekiah and the teruah, on the note of the teruah, which is what we blow on Shon, of course, there is a machlokas. Exactly, is it lots of small notes, which we call teruah? Is it a few longer notes, which we call shivarim? It's not perfection, but it's very close, says the Rambam, and there really is no machlokas on this. However, we all know that there's lots of machlokas. Where is all that machlokas from? And we'll see that in a minute. But the first point, which is very critical to say, is that there is no machlokas on those particular issues. Go back for a second to source number one. And let's go through the other categories of the Rambam. So the first category, let's get this clear. The first category is Perushim HaMekubalim, the received explanations for Sinai, the user guide as to how the Torah works. HaChelik HaSheni, the second category, he says, Heim HaDinim, back in source number one. Heim HaDinim Shebehem Amru Shehem Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai. These are halachas of which we say it's called Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai. What do we mean by this? Says the Rambam, it's similar to the first category, the Ein Aleihem Raya, Kamosha Amar, but there's no proof in the text for them. There are things that don't have any connection with the words of the written text. But Gamzeh Mimashe Ein Bo Machlokes, and there's no Machlokes there either. What is Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai, says the Rambam? Halachas that we also receive from Moshe as part of the user guide, but they don't relate to the text. For example, there are certain things that we see. I brought in the English underneath the minimum dimensions of a kezayis, of a kebetza, all of these things. There are some halachas that come straight out of nowhere. The idea of planting 10 saplings up to the Shemitah year, also, and what you can plant, what you can't. There are a number of examples. The Rambam gives 30 in this, which I haven't gone through in detail. Things that we would never have known from the text. I'll give you another example. The din of the Beis HaShueva, the Simchas Beis HaShueva, and the pouring of the water on the Mizbeach on Sukkot. There is no mention of that in the text. You can find hints like a mem here and a yud here and a mem here, but there's no mention of that directly in the text. Says the Rambam, in summary, the first two categories, the user guide, the manual on Sinai, there's basically no machlokas, and we get that through as a transmission from Sinai. More about that transmission soon. What is the third? HaChelik HaShlishi, and I've cut these short because I don't want to go into all of them now. Back to source number one. HaChelik HaShlishi, Heim HaDinim, these are halachas shenilmadu, which are learned ba'achat hamidot, through one of the midot, we talked about that, this idea of drash, of learning new halacha from the system that Moshe received, but not specifically in detail. Ba'ubahem nofelet machlokas. There's machlokas. But there you'd expect there to be machlokas. Why? Because what's happening with category number three? Rabbis in later generations on the Sanhedrin are looking at the text, analyzing the text, and saying, what conclusions, what interpretations can we draw out of the text? And some of them think X, and some of them think Y, and some of them Z. Because it's the nature of human beings, they disagree. And it's a good thing that they disagree, because that introduces diversity and dynamism within the system. Says the Rambam, that's where the machlokas is. Not on the stuff that was given from Sinai. So that's Chelik HaShlishi. We'll come back to all of these in more detail. Chelik HaRevi'i, Heim HaDinim Shekavum HaNevi'im VeChachamim. These are the halachas which were fixed by the Nevi'im. Now the Rambam brings in prophecy, which we'll have to look at. Were prophets part of the halachic system? Meaning, if you asked a Shaila back in the day, if you lived in the time of David HaMelech, who did you ask your Shaila to? The local Rav or the local Navi? And the local Rav would learn it out from a text of some kind, from the Torah, but the local Navi would tune in to Shamayim and would say, I don't know, I think your dish is a tray. How did that work? What was then Nevuah in the halachic system? The Rambam, we'll see, is a great pains to say no for most of it. But here he mentions, yes, you had a question?
No, I don't think that the Nevuah in the halachic system,
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. The Navi would often wear two hats. We see Eliyahu HaNavi is called Eliyahu HaNavi, and he's also called HaTishvi, which is his Navi hat and his non-Navi hat. The problem is, why does the Rambam say HaNaviim V'HaChachamim? And later I'll bring you, not today, another source that does indicate that Nevuah is part of this bit, but you're right, it's not 100% clear. But what is this? These are Alderech HaGedev HaSiag L'Torah. We all know that there is some halacha that came later, which is rabbinic law. Siag, rabbinic gezeiros. For example, muksa on Shabbos. For example, the idea that we can't eat chicken with milk. And you could list hundreds and hundreds of them. There are many things the Rambam says in the fourth category, which for sure came later. And are they subject to machloket?
Yes.
100%. Because the rabbis are now innovating. New legislation. One rabbi says, I think chicken should be fleishik. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, no, we can trust people to work it out. Chicken should not be fleishik. And there's a machloket. And again, you'd expect there to be a machloket, because they're bringing in something new. Similarly, HaChelik HaChamishi, the fifth and final category, says the Rambam, Heim HaDinim, these are halachas, Shinasu B'derech HaIyum, which are worked out through analysis, okay, to organize and to work out and to order society, shebein bnei adam, which are people between people, davar she'ein bo hosafa al divrei Torah, but they're not adding to the Torah, v'logiran, they're not taking away, or b'inyanu she'ein mipnei hatikun ha'olam, they're fixing up society, b'inyanu hadat, in religious life, v'heim shekorim motam chachamim takanas, u'minhagos. These are things that we call takanot, which are not really to protect the Torah, it's not like a fence, but they're to introduce new important ideas into Jewish life. Again, instituted by the rabbis, like Hanukkah. The idea that there should be a new chag, that we should, or maybe not a chag, but a new holiday, a new celebration that we should have at a certain time of year to remember X, Y, and Z. The idea that a man should give his wife a ksuba under the chuppah. Even though everything the man has to do for his wife during the marriage is already written into the Torah, so the rabbis realized that, you know, later on in the marriage, if he's not living up to expectations, she waves a chumash at him, he'll go, and he'll turn the other way. But if she waves a piece of paper that he signed at the bottom, she waves that at him, so then he'll say, okay. Should it be that way? Of course not. But the rabbis knew that it is that way. And they introduced lots of different things in society, brachot. The idea that the Torah says there is one bracha, the achalta v'savata uvirachta. The rabbi said, this is a fantastic idea. Let's extend this to other areas. Let's put lots of aspects in our daily life whereby there are brachas that we say before food, after food, on beautiful things, on special occasions, on reaching parts of the year, etc. These are all in the fifth category, which are takanot. And again, is there machloket on these? Yes, absolutely. Because they are new ideas that are brought in by the rabbis based on authority that they have. And we'll see that authority. But they are new ideas which are subject to machloket. So the Rambam, in summary, in these five categories, says as follows. Category number 1 and 2 that came from Sinai, that transmission of the process from Sinai, there is no machlokas. Categories 3, which is drasha, producing new halakha from the psukim, and 4 and 5, which are rabbinic legislation, there for sure there is machlokas. And says the Rambam, any machloket you find on any page of the Gemara or any text of halakha will always be in categories 3, 4, and 5. That's what he says. Yes?
In category 3, what is this?
So that's a good question. What is the source? So we have the text, and the source in many ways is in the text. We have what we call the midot, for example, the 13 midot of Rabbi Yishmael, and many, many others that we talked about last week. And we have the people who were trained to use those sources and those methodologies to produce that halakha. And that is the process of drash. And every page of the Gemara has many times. For example, it says, Kaved et avicha ve'et imecha. The word et, on a pshat level, doesn't have a translation. We all know that. It's just a grammatical form. On a drash level, the word et does have a translation. It means with, and the word et often means with. Bo iti, come with me. And Chazal therefore make a drash on that pasuk. They have the text. They have the system, which is that et comes to include something new. And they say, who does et include? It includes more people in the obligation of kibud av v'em. Who? Kabeit et avicha, who comes with your father, your stepmother, who he's married to, who may not be your biological mother. The etimechan, who comes with your mother, your stepfather. So Chazal, on a drash level, use the text, use the principles of drash and the midot, and say, there are four people in this pasuk. There's your mother and your father and your stepmother and your stepfather, and maybe also an older sibling, which I'm not getting into now. And they're all included in the pasuk of Kibud Av V'Em. And every page of the Gemara has these. When we get married, okay, under the chuppah, how do we affect a Jewish marriage? So the Gemara, the beginning of Kiddushin, the Mishnah says there are three ways to affect a Jewish marriage. Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. And we use Kesef today. What do we give? So we give a ring. Also, you could give anything as a treat. You could give a can of Coca-Cola, although it doesn't have quite the same feel to it, okay? But you, as long as it's worth a pruta, that's fine. And it clearly is. It's quite expensive. A can of Coca-Cola these days costs a lot of money. So where do we learn that from? Again, that's a drash. That's a drasha. We learn the idea of making a kinyan through kesef from Avraham Avinu, when he makes a kinyan and he connects with and acquires a chelik in Eretz Yisrael with Marat HaMachpelah. And we learn that over Kicha Kicha, very famous Gemara there in Kiddushin, to the idea of effecting a Jewish marriage. Just like a kinyan there is made by kesef, so a kinyan over here. It's not that anyone's buying anybody. The woman doesn't buy the man and the man doesn't buy the woman. But a kinyan doesn't necessarily mean you're buying something. It's a change of status. But that's only learned through drash. The $64,000 question, by the way, is this, which we haven't got time for today, but which we'll touch on. Take the Rambam's five categories. Category number two, number one, and number two, stuff from Sinai itself. Is that Doraisa or Drabonon? This is not a hard question. Is that Doraisa or Drabonon? Is that Minatora or Midrabonon? Clearly it's Minatora. You can't get more Minatora than something given to Moshe at Sinai. Categories number four and five, which are siagim, which are fences produced by the rabbis later, or institutions produced by the rabbis later. Is that Doraisa or Drabonon? Clearly Durabonon. Meaning number one and two are clearly Doraisa. Number four and five are clearly Durabonon. What's with number three? What do the rabbis do? They look at the text, which is the text, and they produce halakha from the text. Is that Doraisa or is that Durabonon? Nah, that's difficult. That's a tricky one. Because one aspect of it clearly is Doraisa, it comes from the text directly, as opposed to rabbinic law, which comes from the rabbis with authority. On the other hand, it is a rabbinic process which is producing this halakha, and you should just know this is one of the major questions in the Rambam himself, when he says different things at different times and everyone's trying to work out what the Rambam means. More of that another time, but the Rambam seems to indicate that it's Darabanan, and yet he says elsewhere it's clearly Doraisa, meaning when a woman gets married and a man gets married, get married through a ring, which is learnt out through one of the drashot. No one suggests that they're only married on a rabbinic level. They're married on a Torah level. More of that another time. But that is whole books have been written, literally. I have an entire book at home which is dedicated to a specific question as to what does the Rambam mean by category number three. But that's, I'm just flagging that up because that's something you need to know about. Lots of ink has been spilt on that. Yes?
What about the brachas that we say, Shafik, Shalom, and Zotav, and especially Hanukkah, but also the other brachas which you mentioned?
Good. So that's a question in categories four and five, which is as follows. And the Ramban deals with this, and we kind of looked at it last time, which is as follows. Again, the question is, category four and five for sure are rabbinic. So how can we say Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvotav V'tzivanu? God commanded us to do this. God didn't command us to do this. So the answer is, when we're saying V'tzivanu on the general mitzvah, in fact two mitzvahs in the Torah, that we are obligated to follow what the Chazal as a Sanhedrin instituted. Meaning, when we say V'tzivanu L'hadlik Nesh al Shabbat, we're saying God commanded us to listen to the rabbis who told us to light Shabbos candles. And I don't mean any old rabbis. Today's rabbis do not necessarily have this authority, and that is a whole other topic. This topic has thousands of spin-off topics. Is what is today's rabbinic authority? Is it based in the same pasuk? In which case, if the rabbis today tell me that I'm not allowed to use a smartphone, is there also an Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvah Yisav V'tzivanu? Loyli Hishtamesh for smartphone, okay? Or do I turn around and say, no, today's rabbis, you know, whatever, take it or leave it. If I make them my rabbi, then fine. If I don't, then I'll just leave it and I'll give it to someone else. That's another question. But there is actually an opinion you should know in the Yerushalmi that every time you make a brocha on a rabbinic mitzvah, it's always the same bracha, whether it's Shabbos candles or shaking a lulav in the last days of Sukkot, Chanukah or whatever, which is Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvah Savet Sivanu, Lishmo Alachachomim. Which is interesting, because that underlines exactly what you're asking. And also an interesting question is, how is it that women will say Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvah V'tzivanu on a brocha, on a mitzvah that they for sure are not obligated in, even on a rabbinic level? Which is the positive time-bound mitzvahs, although there aren't very many of them. Ashkenazi women, as you know, when they sit in the sukkah, shake a lulav, hear a shofar, whatever it is, also make Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvah V'tzivanu, and they have no tzivui at all. Not Doraisa and not Rabbanon.
No,
there's no chiyuv on any halachic level to hear the shofar. It's a positive time-bound mitzvah. Women over the ages have taken on that they want to hear the shofar. For sure, if a woman does a positive time-bound mitzvah, she gets a schar. The Rambam says that explicitly. There is a merit to it, absolutely. And women have connected with some more than others. But there's no question there is no obligation either on a Torah or rabbinic level. You know, the Jewish people, the Gemara says, Hillel says, Im lav nevim heim b'nei nevim heim. The Jewish people have a certain collective nevuah that they connect with certain things more than other things. Women have taken it upon themselves over the generations to go and hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which is a wonderful thing. And to the extent that we go around hospitals blowing the shofar for women, even though they have no chiyuv on a Torah or rabbinic level at all. But okay, women want to do that. Parshas Zachar is a new thing. That women go shlechta shul to hear Parshas Zachar. According to almost all poskim, women have no chiyuv to hear Parshas Zachar. And yet everybody's running to shul to hear Parshas Zachar. I'm sure if you ask people, 100 years ago women didn't go to hear Parshas Zachar. Women didn't go. But now they do. Okay, listen, it's not such a bad thing to go to shul and hear the laning every now and then. It's a good thing, not a bad thing. But, and yet, and this introduces controversial ground, what happens if women decide they want to start wearing tzitzit and talis and tefillin? And they say, look, I have no obligation to hear shofar, but you're happy if I hear shofar, but now I actually want to wear tefillin, so what have you got against that? That's another question which is not for now, and probably not forever on this course, but at some point when we decide to get more controversial, we can talk about that. Okay, let's please go over the page to page 2. Yes. Oh, that's a very good question. The gentleman over here is asking, can halacha be derived from anything that happened before Sinai? Of Abraham. Can halacha be derived from anything that happened before Sinai, before Sinai? And the answer is yes and no. Yes and no. The Rambam, in his Perush on the Mishnah, in Chulin, talks about Gid HaNasha. And in fact, this is a debate within the Mishnah itself, Gid HaNasha. Gid HaNasha is a mitzvah that only appears once in the Torah, which is in the Parsha of Yaakov and Esav, of Yaakov fighting the Malach. And yet this is one of the 613 mitzvahs. And there is a debate there in the Mishnah itself as to whether the mitzvah applied before, or is learned from before, or it actually came afterwards, but the Torah thematically inserts it, the mention of it there, because it wants to connect it with Yaakov. And the Rambam clearly makes a claim. He says there is no mitzvah which derives from a period before Sinai. Brit Milah we do not do because Avram Avinu did it, but there it's a bit easier because there's another pasuk in Parshas Tazria, will be Yom HaShmini, on the 8th day you have to do the Brit Milah. But says the Rambam, every mitzvah comes only because we had a commandment at Sinai or afterwards. Now we may learn certain details of a mitzvah from before. Give you an example. Do this as an experiment. Go out in the street and ask people, is there a mitzvah in the Torah to invite guests to your home and extend hospitality? And everyone will say, of course, hachnachas orchim, to invite guests, to invite them to be hospitable. Of course. Now ask the people, where do we learn that in the Torah? And what's everybody going to tell you? Avram Avinu. You can't learn a mitzvah in the Torah from Avram Avinu. You can learn details. He ran to the herd and he stood over them and he waited on them, etc. But the mitzvah of inviting guests, if you want to know halachically, where does that come from? Look in the Rambam in Hilchos Avil in chapter 14, and he will tell you it is the mitzvah of the Ahavta L'Riecha Kamocha. That is the mitzvah. The Ahavta L'Riecha Kamocha is the mitzvah of Haknasas Orchim. And that's a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. Not from Avraham Avinu. So that's actually a great question, is there an Indian in halacha to celebrate a birthday? Because the only birthday we see celebrated is Paro's birthday, before Sinai. How does that work? That all comes into the same idea. Let us move on, but that's a great question. Before we get into, by the way, the page 2, maybe I'll just mention appendix number 1, which I'm not going to get into in great detail. Appendix number 1, which I've given you here, are a few sources dealing, we kind of touched on this, on page 4 and 5, dealing with the imperative of Torah Shabbat Peh. Why do we really need a manual, a user guide? Why can't we just use the Chumash? Why does there have to be categories 1 and 2? Things that came from Sinai. And it's pretty clear after a short amount of analysis that the Torah Shebichtav on its own really doesn't make sense as a halachic system. You need the user guide for all sorts of reasons. I'll mention a couple of them now. I'm not going to go into all the sources. Even just vocalization. There are no vowels in the Torah Shebichtav. Without the Torah Shebaal Peh, you wouldn't know what the vowels were. When it says, for example, Loisev Asheil Gidi, okay? Don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. How do you know that says chalav? Maybe it's chalev. Maybe don't cook a kid in its mother's chalev. The mother has fats. And maybe that's the prohibition, to cook food in chalev. But to cook food in milk is 100% fine. How do you know? You only know from Torah Shebaal Peh. Punctuation. There are no commas or full stops in the text of the Torah. The only way you know the punctuation is through the notes. The notes are, and it's not just a nice way to sing the Torah, the notes are the punctuation. Punctuation is critical. You know, classic example. Let's eat, grandma. Or let's eat grandma. Okay? Very different connotations. The old favorite, like a panda eats, shoots, and leaves. Okay? As opposed to a panda eats, shoots, and leaves. And you get this lahavdil on the Torah level as well. Look at number 13. This is a very interesting halacha lemaisa. Just look at this one source. Loi signoivu. Do not steal. The loi sechachashu. Do not deny claims. The loi sechachu. Do not lie. Ish ba'amitai. Ish ba'amitai. Now, what is an amit?
A friend.
And amitah is a code word for Jew and Jew. Meaning, there are certain halachot that apply between a Jew and the rest of the world. And there are certain halachot bein adam lechavero that apply only between Jews and Jews. Some of them are well known. For example, you can't lend on interest to another Jew, but you can to another non-Jew. So what's with these? So it seems clear, ish ba'amitai says at the end, these things, you cannot do ish ba'amitai, Jew on Jew. Oh, so loy tignoivu. So I can't steal from Jews, but maybe I can steal from non-Jews. But if you look in the halacha, it's very clear, you cannot. Absolutely not. You are not allowed to steal from anybody. But doesn't it say ish ba'amitai? Comes along the ritzvah at number 14 and says, no, you didn't sing it properly. You didn't read it properly. It doesn't say loy tignoivu, loy techachashu, loy techakru ish ba'amitai. It says loy tignoivu. Where's the full stop? There's an etnachta under the tignoivu. Number 13, page 4. Page 4, number 13. Loi signoibu, it says, loi signoibu. Stop. That's a separate thing. And the rest is qualified by Ishva Amitai. So when the Baal Torah stands up and sings in shul and gets it wrong, so it doesn't matter that much, but it's preferable that he doesn't. But on a halachic level, it can make a massive difference to the meaning of the psukim. That's all part of Torah Shebaal Peh, as we know. Legal definitions, I used to be a lawyer, I'm sure there are people in this room who are lawyers or used to be lawyers. If you write a legal document, and the Torah at the end of the day is also a legal system, and you don't define your terms, then you're lost from the very beginning. It says, don't do malacha on Shabbat. And if you do, then you're liable to the death penalty. But it doesn't anywhere define what malacha is. Well, that's not very helpful, really. Because how do I know what to do or what not to do? I suppose I could do the wrong thing and they'll find me and say, ha ha, that was one of the things you weren't meant to do. Shkoyach. No, you know, you won't do that again, correct? Because I'm liable to death penalty. So, you know, how do you know what it is? And the answer is, there's a Torah Shebaal Peh coming to explain. There are many, many examples. Shchita, I put here that it even refers explicitly to a system outside the text where you'll find the commands. And I'll leave you to look at the rest of page 4 and page 5 on your own. Even straightforward things that you'd think could not possibly be a question. Brit Milah. Where do you perform the mitzvah of Brit Milah? It doesn't say. It doesn't say. And yet there's nobody that has any question as to where Brit Milah is. But when it comes to the word Orla, so we talk about the Orla of your ears on a thematic level, Orla of your mouth. Maybe you have to pierce the ear of the little baby, who knows? And yet, no. Everyone agrees that Brit Milah is Brit Milah, and this is all part of the user guide, of the manual that we have. Now, go back, please, now. I'm sorry to have you running around a bit on the sheet, but go back to page 2. We'll stick on page 2 for a minute. You need to know that the Rambam's fivefold categorization that we've looked at, which is very critical, is not agreed upon by everybody. There are others that turn around and say, no, absolutely not. The entire Torah was given on Sinai, not only categories 1 and 2, but also category 3, meaning the drashot. And have a look, please, at the Hagdamah to the Sefer HaKabbalah of the Rivet. This is the Rivet, this is source number 4. This Rivet is not the famous Rivet that comments a lot on the Rambam, which is an earlier Rivet, but he lived around 100 years before the Rambam. Have a look in number 4. Says the Rivet the following. Number 4, page number 2, source number 4. Ula Oilam. Chachmei HaTalmud, the rabbis of the Talmud, the Kol Shekein Chachmei HaMishnah, and certainly the rabbis of the Mishnah, Afilu Davar Katan Lo Amru Milibam. They didn't introduce even the smallest thing on their own. There was no innovation, he says. Chutz, apart from Min HaTakanot, of the Takanot, Shetiknu BaHaskamat Kulam, which they agreed through their authority with agreement. Kedei, La'asot Siag V'Torah, in order to make a boundary around the Torah. Now, that is what we call categories 4 and 5, before with the Rambam. But he says, apart from 4 and 5, the rabbis introduced nothing new. And it's category 3 that he's debating on. Ve'im la'akshach adam sheyesh bo reach apikorsis. If a heretic were to come to you, lo man say to you, mitnei she'nechleku b'kama mekomos, but the rabbis disagree all the time. Lekach ani mitzupek, therefore I'm in doubt with Ibrahim as to what they said. I have doubts about the rabbis. Afata hakeyet shinav, you have to blunt his teeth. V'hodiyehu, and you have to explain to him, shehu mamrei al pi beis din, he's rebelling against the beis din. U'sheloi nachluchos, that they really didn't disagree, la'olam ever be'ikah mitzvah, on anything central to a mitzvah. Eleva told us they only disagreed on the small details. Shishamu ikra mi rabbi sehim. They heard the principles from their rabbis. The loy shalum al tabu sehim, but they didn't ask fully on the details. Because they didn't always serve their rabbis as much as they should have done. And we'll see this was the Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Similarly, loy nechleku im madlikim neva Shabbat. They don't disagree on whether you should light Shabbat candles in law. Al ma nechleku, they don't disagree on what you should light with. Ba ma madlikim by eight. So what do they disagree on? The Masha Madlikim, on what you should use for lighting, or Ma'e Madlikim. Loi Nechliku im Chova Likro Kriya Shema, they don't disagree whether you should say the Shema Arabit or Shacharit, or not. Al Ma Nechliku, what do they disagree on? Me'e Matai Korinit Shema, from when can you say the Shema, the Arabit? Or Me'e Matai Korinit Shema, the Shema. Now, the Raivad says something very important, which is very different to the Rambam. He says, they received everything on Sinai. And they didn't produce anything new apart from rabbinic law. There's no drash process. There's no ongoing evolution and development of halacha from the text. So why is there machlokas? Now the Rambam will say there's machlokas because it came later. Because they disagreed on interpretation. That's why there's machlokas. But the Rambam says it didn't come later. It came at the beginning. So according to him, why is there machlokas? And what did he say? There isn't much. There isn't much. No, there isn't much. Just in the details. Okay, but there's a lot of details. And there's a lot of machlokas about those details. And according to him, the reason the machlokas came in is because people weren't clear. And we'll see in a minute, the Rambam goes crazy over this. And he says, how can you say that? How can you say that there's A, that there's very little machlokas, and B, the reason it's there is because things got a bit garbled? He says, you're worried about apikorsis? This is the biggest apikorsis of all. To say that the Masorah got garbled because people weren't getting the details straight. But the Raivad says, no, absolutely not. The details were given on Harsinai apart from the rabbinic laws. And there are others who follow this as well, you should know. When the Jewish people were fighting against the Karaites in the 10th and 11th, 12th century, this is the approach that they mostly took. Meaning, the Karaites came along and said, look, you rabbis, you make half of it up. Rabbinic law, rabbinic Judaism, you make half of it up. And the Rambam's answer would be, well, no, we're not making it up. There is a system of rabbinic analysis. But of course, maybe you can't answer that to the Karaites so much, because they're going to say, ah, that's exactly what we said. So the answer was very much, no, we're not making anything up, it comes from Sinai. The Rambam says, I don't need to give that answer. Later on also, in the 19th century, when they were fighting reform, and reform was again accusing them of having too much rabbinic involvement, the response was often, no, everything comes from Sinai. And that's helpful as a response, but the problem is you then have to deal with the issue of machlokas. Where does that machlokas come from? And we see that the 19th century rabbis, like Rav Hirsch, who we're going to see now, definitely take the view, that not like the Rambam, that everything came from Sinai, in category number 3. Look at Rav Hirsch's famous statement in number 5, the beautiful words in number 5. He says, the Torah Shebichtav is to the Torah Shebal Peh in the relation of short notes on a full and extensive lecture on any scientific subject. For the student who has heard the whole lecture, short notes are quite sufficient to bring back afresh to his mind at any time the whole subject of the lecture. For him, a word, an added mark of interrogation or exclamation, a dot, the underlining of a word, etc., etc., is often quite sufficient to recall to his mind a whole series of thoughts, a remark. For those who have not heard the lecture from the master, such notes would be completely useless. If they were to try and reconstruct the scientific contents of the lecture literally from the notes, they would of necessity make errors. Words, marks, etc., which serve those scholars who had heard the lecture as instructive guiding stars to the wisdom that had been taught and learnt, stare at the uninitiated as unmeaning sphinxes. Nice. But listen to what Rav Hirsch has just said. Rav Hirsch has just said that the Torah Sheba'al Peh is a lecture at Sinai. And that lecture is being recorded by the Torah Shebichtav as short notes, but the lecture was given in full at Sinai, and we have to keep the lecture going. The Rambam would say, no, there wasn't a lecture of the entire Torah Sheba'al Peh at Sinai. There was a certain user guide, a manual, and the rest was developed as time went along. You should just know also that on the Gemara we looked at last time, what about Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva and Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, with the question as to why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know Rabbi Akiva's Torah? Now, the way we learned it last week, it worked perfectly, because Rabbi Akiva developed new Torah over the centuries. According to this Shita, why doesn't Rabbi Akiva have the same Torah as Moshe Rabbeinu? Remember, it's not just details. Moshe doesn't understand anything in the lecture. Why doesn't he understand? So, I'm not going to go through the whole source, but the Or HaChaim in number 6 on the Chumash relates to that point very specifically and explicitly. And he says the following. He says, actually, the Moshe Rabbeinu had all the details. He just didn't have the drashot to connect the dots. He couldn't connect the details with the psukim. That connection was done later. But he had the details and he had the psukim. They just didn't necessarily link together. Meaning, the people who take this position have a whole different way of looking at all of the questions that we asked last time. So, in summary, there are two positions. I want to have clarity on this. There are two positions as to how Torah Sheba'al Peh works. Everybody agrees on categories 1 and 2, 4 and 5. 1 and 2 came from Sinai, 4 and 5 came later from the rabbis with the authority. But what about 3? So the Rambam says 3 came later. Drashas. And the Ravid says, no, 3 came at the beginning. So if it came at the beginning, why is it a machlokas? So the Rambam says, well, there's machlokas because it came later. And the Ravid says, there's machlokas, but not much. Not much. The Rambam was very unhappy with this. I want you to see his words in number 7, which will draw a close to this particular issue, and then we'll talk about one other thing before we finish. Look at the Rambam when he talks about drashas. Yes. Yes, I will. The Rambam's position is that the drashot, the halachas learned from the psukim, were developed later over time. That's why there is machlokas, because the rabbis have different approaches to interpretation. Whereas the Ravid and the others, and Rav Hirsch, we saw later, they take the position, no, all of this halacha was given at Sinai as well. And the Rambam has great trouble with it. Look number 7 on the third line. The third line says as follows, Aval, says the Rambam, Svaras Misha Chasha, if anyone should think Shegam hadinim sheyesh behem machloikas, that even those halachas on which there is machloikas, kibla mi Moshe, that they also came from Moshe, which is exactly what the Ravid said. If anyone should think this, says the Rambam, the nafla behem machloikas, and the reason there's machloikas is machmas ta'ut, is because of a mistake. The Kabbalah in the transmission, or shichacha, or there's forgetfulness. One of them is right, the Kabbalah say, in his tradition. And the second one is wrong. Or they forgot. Or they didn't listen properly in class, which is exactly what the Ravid said. Hine says the Rambam, Zeh Chai Hashem, as God lives, he says. Davar Maguna Umuzar Ma'od. This is a disgraceful and strange thing to say. It's simply incorrect. The loy matim leklalim, it doesn't fit with the principles of halacha. And he's casting aspersions on those rabbis through whom we received the Torah. The heidi osamli de hashkafan, he said it. It's bringing people to a faulty hashkafa. Zumiut yediyah divrei chachamim hanim tzayim betam. And it's ignorant, he says. Yes, sure, the user guide was given from Moshe and passed down, for sure. But these people, these other people, he says, are not making a distinction between category numbers 1 and 2, on the one hand, v'hachidushim shenilmadu b'darchi ha'ir, and later things which were learned through the process of Ian. And this is absolutely fundamental. There are two ways to approach Torah Misinai. There's the Rambam, who insists that you have to teach that things do develop as time goes on through the Sanhedrin. That's why there's machlokas. And then there's the others, the Ravid, Rav Hirsch, and others that say, no, everything was given at the beginning, apart from drabonos, obviously, that came later. Ah, but why is there machlokas? Well, there isn't much. This is a very big debate. In most of the schools that I'm aware of, the children learn in these days, the principle that they are taught in Torah Shabbat Peh is that everything was given at Sinai. And the Rambam says that's a problem to say that, because it doesn't fit with the issue of Machlokas at all, and therefore the Rambam's approach is definitely the approach, I think, which is more understandable in many ways and makes a lot of sense in terms of the way that we see the development of Torah Shabbat Peh. Yes? Yes, but he said that was a Kabbalah Mitzinai. That was a Kabbalah, and the Gemara concludes then that was from Sinai. Oh, so they didn't have a clear Kabbalah? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
But in the end, they found someone who did have a clear Kabbalah. And in the end, who's arguing? Doeg HaEdomi. Doeg is, I'm not sure he's the clearest one for the Kabbalah. Okay. So what, I don't understand exactly what you're asking. The calculation of the Kiddush HaKodesh? Yes, there were halachas that were forgotten. Yes, there is a whole discussion about halachas that were forgotten when Moshe Rabbeinu died, etc. And what kind of halachas were they? We'll talk about that a little bit. In terms of Kiddush HaChodesh, he's talking about the fact that we can use Greek mathematics to reproduce the issue of Kiddush HaChodesh. The question is, Kiddush HaChodesh number 1, 2, or 3, how does that work? Okay, this is something we'll get to Be'ezrat Hashem. I want to have one last discussion about for the next 10 minutes of the shiur on something related but a little bit new. Have a look, please, on page number 3. And I want to do these last three sources, which I think are very important, in the 10 minutes that we have. When it comes to the actual material that was given at Sinai, so there the Rambam makes this claim, no machlokas, no machlokas. How do we try and preserve a system which is not playing the game broken telephone? I'm sure you all come across the game broken telephone, or telephone, you whisper something in someone's ear, and they whisper in someone else's ear, and then the whole point of the game at the end is the person at the end of the line says something completely different, and everybody thinks it's very funny. I don't know if it's really that funny at all, but whatever, people seem to find it amusing. How do we know we're not playing broken telephone? Now, for the Rambam, that's a question on 1 and 2. For the Raivad and the others, that's a question on number 3 as well. Okay? But how do we try to avoid this? So first of all, we have a chain. We have a clear transmission. If you look in number 8, this is a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai, Masru Yeshua, Yeshua Zekeinim, Zekeinim Nevi'im, Nevi'im Masru Allah Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, meaning that we have a chain of transmission. And that goes on all the way until, in this Mishnah, Hillel and Shammai, but it goes beyond. It goes all the way to Rav Ashi. When the Rambam starts off his Mishnah Torah, he first gives a list of the chain of transmission from Moshe to Rav Ashi. By the time you hit the Talmud, you don't really need a chain of transmission anymore because it's now all in a book. But even after the Talmud, we also have a clear chain of transmission. We don't lose things in the midst of time. I brought you in Appendix 2, quite a fun thing. I brought you in Appendix 2, if you just turn for a second, to page number 6. I brought you a chain of transmission from Sinai, which follows basically the Rambam going through Moshe, Yeshua, Pinchas, Eli, into the Nevi'im, all the way through from Shmuel HaNavi through to Ezra, into the Tanaim, in the time of the Mishnah, from number 23 to 34, through the Amoraim in the time of the Gemara, through to Rav Ashi, etc. It goes also through, if you turn to page 7, the Gaonim, and the truth is there are more links to this chain that need to be there, because some of these people were colleagues, not necessarily rabbis and students. I put you some notes at the end. This is an Ashkenazi chain, just one second. It goes through the Rishonim of Ashkenaz. If you look in page 8, it goes through Rashi, it goes through the Ramah, down to the Acharonim, it comes through the Gaon of Vilna in number 129, it goes through Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Briska Rav, Rav Baruch Balevavitz, Rav Nachum Prasovitz, Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz, who is my Rebbe, goes to me, goes to you, although maybe actually you come before me in the chain sometimes, maybe I come before you, maybe we can both connect with each other, and then it goes on wherever it goes. Meaning, we have a chain. This is not just something which is lost, and actually in terms of transmission, it doesn't even need this many links. Yes, the question.
The Gemara is at the time of the Amorite.
Yes, the Gemara is exactly the time of the Amorite. We'll talk about that more. I put at the end a little thing that I sometimes think about. I was very close to my great-grandmother, Alei HaShalom. She lived until she was almost 100 years old. She died when I was in my 20s. She was born in the 1800s. Okay? The old people that she knew as a small child could have easily met the Vilna Gaon. She lived in Lithuania. The old people that my great-grandmother knew could have easily met the Vilna Gaon. So between the Vilna Gaon and me, there are really only two links. There's the old people and there's my great-grandmother, and then I'm there. And that's, the Vilna Gaon was born in 1720. Meaning, it's not actually hard to pass things over very large amounts of time with even less links than we have here. And again, we're talking about a Masorah from Sinai, which was 1313 BCE, through to the Gemara, which was around 300-400 CE. And therefore, that period of time, we have a clear Masorah. In order to try and avoid broken telephone, then we make sure we teach it in a certain way. Have a look now, the last couple of sources in 9 and 10, and we'll finish with this idea. Says the Gemara in Eruvin, Ketzad Seder HaMishnah. What is the order, Tanur Rabbanan, Ketzad Seder Mishnah? How is the oral law taught? Mishnah from the word Vishinantam Levarecha. Now what does Vishinantam mean? You will teach it, but it's from the word Sheni, to repeat, okay? The Shanot, to go over. It's also Chazamek of... Yes, Chazanik, a beautiful drasha to say it's like Shinayim, meaning you have to imprint it in a way, and this is, we'll see exactly what we're talking about, which is clear. So if somebody asks you a question in Torah, you're not Magamgem, well, I don't know, I heard, whatever. The Rashi says, by the way, if you go to a shir in Torah, and you can't say over the shir when you leave the shir, says you get schar halicha, you made an effort, thank God you made an effort to go, but you get no schar limud Torah. Because if the Torah is not clear, and this is as much the responsibility of the teacher as anybody else, if the Torah is not clear, where is the limud? You have to be able to say it over the Shinant, and it has to be imprinted, like a tooth mark, if you like, on your mind. But look at number 9, you'll see how this works. Ketzad Seder Mishnah. Moshe Lamad Mipi Hagvura. Moshe learns from God. Nichnas Aaron. So then what happens? Aaron comes in. V'shana lo Moshe Pirkan. Moshe teaches him the lesson. Nistalek Aaron v'yashav l'smol Moshe. And Moshe goes, Aaron goes, sits on the left. V'nichnasu bana. And then Aaron's sons come in. By the way, Moshe's sons are a big question mark. Moshe had two sons of his own. And they don't seem to form any part of the Masorah whatsoever. And that's a whole other question as to what happened to them. Not for now. V'shana lehem Moshe pirkan. And Moshe teaches Aaron's sons in front of Aaron. Nistalku banav. And then the sons go to the side. Nichnasu zakein. And then the elders come in. V'shana lehem Moshe pirkan. And Moshe teaches them. Nistalkul is a Canaan, and then they sit to the side. Nichlasu Kolam, and the people come in, Vashana Lahem Moshe Pirkan, and Moshe teaches them in front of the others. Nimsu, it turns out, says the Gemara. Biyad Aaron Arba, Aaron said it four times, Biyad Banav Shlosha, Biyad Zakenim Shnaim, or Biyad Kolam Echad. Fine. But that's not all. Nistalak Moshe, then Moshe goes to the side, Vashana Lahem Aaron Pirkan. Then Aaron teaches over the material in front of his teacher. Nistalku Aaron, and then Aaron goes to the side, Vishanalahem Bana Pirkam, and the children teach it, and on until eventually everybody hears it multiple times, as a student and as a teacher. Meaning, how do you avoid playing broken telephone with a Masorah? The answer is, you do the best you can, and it's never going to be 100%, but the whole nature of the game telephone is that you whisper it once with the purpose of the message being garbled. That's the whole purpose. The whole purpose of learning Torah Shabbat is the opposite. You repeat it, and repeat it, and repeat it. And it's not in writing, such that you could misinterpret it. If I put it in writing on a shelf, and then someone else picks it off the shelf and reads it and says, well, I don't know, I think he meant this, and I'm not there to clarify, that's a big problem. Oral law is much clearer than written law, because I can go through it, and I can hear, tell it back to me, say to me how you understood it, and I'll tell you if that's what I meant. And we have this back and forth. You know how halacha is learned and how Torah is learned. The chavrusa. In a chavrusa, everybody is both a student and a teacher. That's the whole point. That's why to teach and to learn are very related. Ilmod ulalamed. It's not a different verb. And therefore, everything that can be done is done to ensure that there is clarity of the Torah Shebaal Peh. And it's not broken telephone. And, yes, sir?
I just say, with your permission, I understand this right there is the reason why in the Shastri Moreh, the post-slope and the Rashi have four lines before the text begins.
I never knew that. Is that right? Is that always the case? That's very interesting. So there's always four lines? Oh, what, at the top of the page? Blank lines? Or you mean four lines of the Rashi and Tosfos?
Four lines of Rashi.
The Tosfos, and then the Gemara text begins. Interesting, we'll have to go through each page of Shas and see whether that worked. But also the last point which I want to tell you is as follows. The oral law, Torah Shabbat Peh, is not holy words. It's not holy words. It's holy ideas. Look at the last line, look at the Torah number 10, and we'll finish with this. It says Rav Moshe Glasson, who we saw last time as well. Aval Da, you should know. Dehine achiluk hagadol v'hagnigla le'ayim kol shebein Torah shebichtav v'Torah shebal peh. The big difference between Torah shebal peh and Torah shebichtav. Hu ki Torah shebichtav nimser ele Moshe mila b'mila. The Torah shebichtav, the written law, was given in holy words. Mibreishit v'ad le'ayim kol Yisrael. V'Torah shebal peh nimser lo ha'inyan v'lo ha'mila. That's very important. The Torah Shebal Peh is clear because it's not a string of words. It's not meant to be a magic formula passed down from Moshe to the next. Just get this exactly right, otherwise it won't open the, you know, you won't have the passcode. No, it's holy ideas. And with ideas, I can be much clearer with you and I can make sure you've got the idea. That's very, very important. And it's, by the way, true even on a halachic level. A chumash, once a chumash is printed, the words themselves have intrinsic kedusha, because the words themselves are holy. A gemara, when it's printed, only has the kedusha of a sefer once somebody starts to learn it. Whilst it's still been in the shop, unopened, it doesn't yet have the same kedusha, and when you open it up and you learn it, you create the kedusha, because the Torah Shabbat Peh is happening in here, it's the ideas, it's the concepts. And this is why we're not playing broken telephone. Not just because we repeat and repeat and repeat, but also it's the question of getting the idea, getting the concepts across, until eventually it gets recorded in the Gemara. Now, today, of course, we have a problem, which is today it is words. We have a Talmud. And it's no longer just ideas, but it is words. And therefore we are now stuck with the problem that we have a Torah Shabbat Peh, which has been crystallized and turned into a text, which is not what we wanted, and not what we should have done, but what can you do? Galut is upon us, and we'll have to go next time and go further. Time is out now as to why that happened, how that happened, and what we now do with a system which is less than ideal. Okay? We'll move on next time. There's
Hashem. Words over here, which seem to contradict what you said about the television.